you're wondering why we've just played 3 minutes of Pink Floyd's Great Gig in the Sky live, we have no explanation. Mikey and I just damn well felt like it. I wonder what Mick Guerin thinks about that rebel behaviour. How are you, Mick?
Mate, I love a bit of Pink Floyd. One of the great moments in Bohemian Rhapsody, the movie, is when they talk about the song being too long, and the same guy who produced it produced Pink Floyd's major album, obviously Dark Side of the Moon. And let's be honest, Matty, Dark Side of the Moon has songs that are so long you can't actually tell when the next song starts.
Well, they all join together. And when they play them on the radio, it's weird because they sort of cut off at the point where it sort of usually drifts into the next song. So that was the Great Gig in the Sky, which was a tribute to Sid, one of their original members who didn't go the journey.
Well, isn't it funny? I remember as a kid, when I was about 12 or 14, watching Dark Side of the Moon or the video, and the wall, you see, another brick in the wall, and thinking this is the most trippy, crazy stuff I've ever seen in my life, how amazing this was when I was a kid growing up in a small town. Maddie, it kind of feels like we're living in that at the moment, because I get up most mornings now and spend my day having conversations with people which, if someone had told me 3 months ago I'd be having, I would have said, well, that's totally ridiculous. That's the silliest thing I've ever heard in my life. And I have these conversations because it's incredible the way the world works at the moment. Someone puts out a tweet, and another person reacts to a tweet, and then someone will ring me and say, oh, I see Matt Stewart's blowing with Michael Delgate, and then someone
again?
Else story even. And then someone puts a story about it in the paper, and then someone rings me and says, oh, Caulfield Cup's been called off. And you're like, what? And I'm like, no. And then it just gets on and on and on. And what you and I cut our teeth on as young guys were being journalists where you needed two or three sources before you went to print. And if you got it wrong, the sports editor clipped around the side of the head, or the editor dragged you in the office and gave you the dressing down.
Well, I had my sports editor. Her name was Tony Hetherington. She was a terrific sports editor. And I remember I went to her with a story once. I said, oh, this is the hot mail about this, this, and this. And she said, we do not print rumours. And I don't know whether that still applies, but that was the case at the time, you know.
Well, it's very much the case now. Like, obviously, there's been some really radical stuff happening in New Zealand racing, and there's people who are on websites who just write stories, which are just lies. They're just absolute plain-faced lies. There's no other way to describe them, about people losing their jobs. People have fired a bit of a tweet. Matt Stewart's been fired by RSN. He had a great tenure.
Don't say that. You'll give them ideas.
And it's remarkable, Matt, that these things happen, and they're happening so often. I've had horse trainers, like, ring, admittedly, you know, trainers' wives, I'm not ringing, in tears. Oh, it's closing racing, Alice's closing. No, it's not. Oh, no, but we read it on Facebook. It's just staggering. I constantly spend all day trying to find out if things are true so I can tell people what's true, because what's happened, Matt, is there's so few trusted racing media because everybody works for someone else's website or someone's website, or they'll align with the VRC or they'll align with BetEasy or whatever, that no one wants to believe anything else anybody says. It's a time, Matty, where I never thought we would get to this stage, but what's happened is the erosion of the racing media has got to the stage now where everybody can call fake news with everything, and everybody can abuse everybody else, and it just goes round and round.
Yeah, and fake news becomes real news because it fills internet holes and so on. Hey, I've got a question for you. Just thinking of something, whether it's true or not. Is pyroplasmosis true? And if it is, what's going on?
It's very true. Pyroplasmosis is a disease which basically horses can get, and it makes them anemic, and they can get jaundiced and that sort of stuff. It's basically not very healthy. What's happened is Aenea in New Zealand, who was imported from Europe, because we don't have pyroplasmosis in New Zealand, it tends to be transported by ticks, and the ticks we have in New Zealand aren't capable of transporting it, so they can't be a vector for pyroplasmosis. So what's happened is someone's imported an ear from Germany. She tested negative, Europe, my apologies, from Europe. She's tested negative to pyroplasmosis. She's now being sent to Australia to be bred to a stallion, and her next test has come back positive to pyroplasmosis. So for us to send horses across the borders to Australia and to Hong Kong and to Singapore, we need to be pyroplasmosis free. But so technically at the moment, New Zealand can't be accredited as being pyroplasmosis free. So flights of New Zealand horses to Australia have to be suspended for the foreseeable future until we work out two things. First of all, no other horses in the country have it, so this mare can be isolated and never leave again. But see, it can't spread from horse to horse here, Matt, because we don't have the tick who enables it to be spread. The only way you could spread it would be if I injected a horse, then took that same mead on and injected a different horse. Mm. So it's not a big deal. But technically, New Zealand now has pyroplasmosis.
So okay, I think the issue is timeline now, is how long do the experts think it will be contained and not no longer an issue and the flights can resume? Because obviously this has an impact on the crisscrossing of breeding stock and racing stock between Australia and New Zealand, and we are edging, you know, Brisbane Carnival and so on. So is it down to timeline?
Look, you're talking 10 days, probably. Now this is, I don't want to sound like I'm being dismissive of this, because governments get involved, and therefore the Ministry for Primary Industry sends a vet, they do a report, they send it to the Australian government, they go, okay, there's not an outbreak of pyroplasmosis in New Zealand, it's cool, we can fly the horses. All horses have a blood test before they fly anyway, so they're checked for this and array of other things before they fly. But what's happened this morning is there's been a headline put by Andrew Hawkins on Twitter saying, breaking news, indefinitely all flights are gone. So people now are trying to sell horses, and people say we're not buying horses and the borders are closed. Look, it's probably got out of hand very quickly for something which experts, because I'm not an expert in this, but experts are telling me, look, this is going to be a week, we're going to need to recertify. Yes, we can't fly horses at the moment. No, there's no outbreak of this. This will be taken care of, and smarter heads will prevail with common sense. But again, it's a good example of how a headline slanted one way or another, which doesn't provide a lot of context to the actual story, might get a few more retweets, but it also endangers some people who are trying to sell horses. There's two live auctions going on in the horses at the moment, and people who don't bother to dive into the details, Matt, might quite simply go, oh, well, the place of stuff, we can't bleed, we can't export horses anymore. So, look, it's really tricky stuff. Long story short, I don't think it's an issue heading forward. Will it affect the spring carnival? Almost certainly, 99.9%. No.
All right, that's very clear cut. Hey, got an SMS. Media have always been liars and hypocrites, not just now. So that sort of scoops us up as well, Mick. So there you go. Hey, I'm going to get to the dramatically wonderful news that the pubs are reopening in New Zealand. You're going to take full advantage. But any other racing or harness racing? Devastating for father and son to die so close together, Graham and Gavin Lang.
Well, I think it's devastating when anybody has to bury one of their kids. I feel a little good, because Graham Lang was a very good personal friend of mine. I'm actually closer to Graham than I was to Gavin. I really liked Gavin, but Graham's a guy I had a lot to do with. And, you know, to bury your own kids is the worst thing for any parent. But Graham had a stroke about 10 weeks ago, so he had been hospitalised and had been crook since then, so maybe he wasn't quite as cognizant as he had been for the previous 86 and a half years of his life, because he was a very sharp operator, Graham. So if there's any song off I take out of his illness, it's the fact that he probably didn't bear the full brunt of Gavin's loss, if that makes any sense to people.
Yep.
Tremendous horseman. Laconic. He's what you think old Australian horse trainers used to be. A little bit of Bart in the way he talked about things, and he would make quips and then he would just go and do his business. I'm best known for Scotch Notch, but I think it's also flippant, Matt, when you talk about horse people for their horses, because that's only part of the game, and some really good horse people don't get a great horse.
Mm.
So he's best known for Scotch Notch, but for me he was just a really good bloke who had some really great sons and had a wonderful wife and daughter, and those people, I think, Matt, make racing, harness racing in this case, something worth being involved in, rather than just the poker machine mentality which maybe we're steering it toward. And once in a while you think about those people and you go, yep, that's why I still do this for a job, and then you get blokes texting in saying the media are scum as well, and that's fine too, because everybody's left an opinion. As Graham Lang would have said about someone like that, he said, why would you waste your time on somebody who's made too many bad choices?
Exactly right. And one of Graham's sons, Chris, shared the love of the square gator from his father, didn't he?
Well, Gavin did too, but Chris obviously had a world-class horse who, you know, went to Sweden and campaigned over there and Sundown's gift. And then his grandson, Chris Jr., has also run second in the Intermediate Final. So they're an outstanding family. Those patience traits, which you have to learn to train trotters, no different to families who can train jumpers or stayers in the galloping, you know, galloping world. It tends to be passed on. So, I'll miss having chats with him. I must admit we hadn't had a lot of chats in the last couple of years because Graham had really slowed down. But if there was no Graham Lang, there would have been no Gavin Lang, Chris Lang or Chris Lang Jr.
Absolutely.
And that would leave an awfully, awfully big hole in Australasian harness racing. So I'm glad Daddy was around to start this incredible dynasty.
Absolutely. Any other news across the Dutch?
Well, harness racing returns next week. God, it's been a long time, Matt. It's been a long, long time. And it's a long time when you've got no racing because people start talking about everything else in the industry. And it's all what if. So harness racing returns next week with big numbers coming back there. And then the Gallops still don't return until July the 3rd. They're going to try and maybe come back a week earlier, but it's really starting to jarringly hit home now, Matt, how big a gap that is, like 3 months without any income for some of these people. I think it's really starting to hit home, hey, maybe we could have done this differently. But, hindsight's a great thing, particularly in the middle of a pandemic. So harness racing next week back in New Zealand, and the Gallops back still programmed for July the 3rd, Matt. But there's going to be more and more horses coming from New Zealand, once the flights reopen, to Australia, because Matt, the money here simply isn't big enough. And everybody now realises that, and people are now saying, can I do my business differently? As we've all learned in the last 3 months, the answer to that is almost for everybody, yes. And that's going to mean more New Zealand horses coming to the carnivals and also the normal weekday races in Australia. And I think that's good for both sides of the Tasman, to be honest.
And I wonder whether trainers may follow suit, some of the younger ones who are looking at greener pastures. Now, I'm thinking of an analogy. I'm thinking of a Doberman on a leash about to be unclipped as the bar door is about to open at pubs all around Auckland. Are you ready for it, and is it ready for you?
Mate, I'm going to the pub tonight. One of the best-known people in New Zealand racing is my cousin. He's also one of New Zealand's biggest bar owners, a guy called Leo Malloy. And I'm going to his pub tonight because I'm not a big drinker, man. I don't drink at home. I would drink once a week. I never, ever drink at home. I wouldn't have cracked a bottle of wine at home in 20 years. Just not who I am. But I do like bars. I like the conversation in bars. I like talking to people and leaning against bars and talking about horses and footy and that sort of stuff. And, yeah, they're starting tonight, and it's important to support your economy. And it's also important to get out of your house because I'm sick of my wife. So I'm going to go to the pub. I'm going to stand there, talk about horses and footy and all that sort of stuff with people and have a few beers and let the world wash over me. Right. New Zealand's at level 2 now, and the bars are open, maybe about 45 minutes
ago. And I'm going to get your wife on the show tomorrow for her right of reply. Yeah, good on you, Mick. Thanks for that.
Always a pleasure, matey.